There is a way forward.
In the winter of 1996, I accompanied Madeleine Albright, who was then the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, on a trip to the war zones of Africa, where UN peacekeepers were deployed. The tour took us to the civil wars of Liberia, Angola, Rwanda, and Burundi. During the stop in Rwanda, the last on the trip, Albright asked her staff and the crew of her Air Force Boeing 737 to pose for a picture on the runway of Kigali International Airport. Her aircraft was painted white and blue, like a mini Air Force One, and was emblazoned with the words United States of America. Albright's staff and crew stood on the steps and beneath the wings. They included a Greek American, a Czech American, Jewish Americans, Black Americans, and White Americans. There were Air Force crewmen from small towns and State Department experts from Ivy League colleges, and they were all standing there shoulder to shoulder. As a reporter on the trip, I didn't think I belonged in the picture, so I stood over to the side and watched the Rwandan ground crew watching the American picture-taking session. The Rwandans had a slightly quizzical look. I couldn't help wondering to myself what they were making of this scene, which represented America at its best, the spirit of community, the melting pot, the willingness to help faraway strangers in need, the freedom and opportunity for each individual to work his way to the top, and, most important, a concept of citizenship based on allegiance to an idea, not a tribe. As a picture, it represented everything that Rwanda was not. Rwanda had just emerged from an orgy of tribal warfare, Rwandan Hutus against Rwandan Tutsis, in which a million people had been killed, some of them brutally hacked to death with machetes. Rwanda was all olive trees and no Lexuses, a country that was all gnarled roots choking one another and no flowering branches. As I watched that scene on the tarmac, I started to get mad. But not just about the tragedy in Africa, mad about the budget debate that was then going on in the U.S. Congress. It seemed to me then, and even more now, that we have something tremendously special in America. But if we want to preserve it, we have to pay for it, we have to nurture it. But when I listened at that time to the infamous 1994 class of freshman Republicans, I heard mean-spirited voices, voices uninterested in any compromise, voices for whom the American government was some kind of evil enemy. I heard men and women who insisted that the market alone should rule, and who thought it was enough to be right about the economic imperatives of free trade and globalization, and the rest would take care of itself. I heard lawmakers who seemed to believe America had no special responsibility for maintaining global institutions such as the United Nations, the World Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, which are critical for stabilizing an international system from which America benefits more than any other country. And as I thought about all this on the tarmac of Kigali Airport, I said to myself, well, my freshman Republican friends, come to Africa. Hey, it's a freshman Republican's paradise. Yes, sir, nobody in Liberia pays taxes. There's no gun control in Angola. There's no welfare as we know it in Burundi, and no big government to interfere in the market in Rwanda. But a lot of their people sure wish there were. Take, for instance, the desk clerk in Luanda, Angola, who looked at me as if I were nuts when I asked her if it was safe for me to take a walk 3 blocks from the hotel down the main street of the Angolan capital in the middle of the day. No, 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 she shook her head. Not safe. I'll bet she wouldn't mind paying some taxes to put more police on the street. And then there was the Liberian radio reporter who approached me in Monrovia and demanded to know why the U.S. Marines came to Liberia after the Civil War broke out in 1989, evacuated only the U.S. citizens, and then left the Liberians to fight it out alone. We all thought the Marines are coming. We will be saved, the Liberian reporter remarked to me. But then they left. How could they leave? Poor guy. His country has no Marines to rescue him. I'll bet he wouldn't mind paying some taxes for a few good men. Employers don't have to fret at all about pesky worker safety rules in Angola, let alone services for the handicapped. The 70,000 Angolans who have had limbs blown off by landmines planted during the last 25 years of civil war seem to make do just fine on their own. You can see them limping around the streets of Luanda in Fellini-esque contortions, hustling for food and using tree limbs as a substitute for the human variety.